But I'm going to talk about spaces, so I want to start out. I want to know, what's the simplest space? So what's the simplest space? I need answers. So I'll start calling on people. Yeah, what's the simplest space? A point. Okay. So the answer is, this is what I asked for, is a point. Okay. So that'll represent a point. So why is the point so simple? Well, a point actually has no area in some sense. Yeah. So let's talk about some attributes of the point. So first of all, does it have a dimension? Yeah. No. Okay. I'll call on people. Does the point? Okay. So raise your hand. Does it have a dimension? Kids.
No.
No. What? Oh, you're okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Yes. Does it have a dimension?
No.
What? Okay. What do you mean no? Okay. So do you mean no dimension at all, or the dimension is no? What?
No dimension
at all. How many people think a point has no dimension? How many people think otherwise? Winners. So what's the dimension of a point? Okay. Excuse me. I'm asking you a question. Okay. You raise your hand. What's the dimension of a point? You think a point? You know the answer, right? Also, rule is, I try not to call on anybody twice. Okay. So what's the dimension of a point? What's the dimension of a point? A number. What's the dimension of a point? It's zero dimensional. Dimension equals zero. So why is that? So why is it zero dimensional? Anybody want to hazard a suggestion? Yes, please. Well, it has no length.
Yeah, it has no length.
Yeah. So in fact, actually, when we talk about dimension, intuitively and good enough for us, is dimension are considered degrees of freedom. So if you're at a spot, a point, so to speak, in a space, the dimension is the number of different directions you can move in. And a point, you can't go anywhere if you're a point. The point is itself. It's the entirety of everything. So a point has dimension zero because there are no degrees of freedom. Okay. You have a comment?
Yes, that's because a point, a side is a straight line, but the point sides are not straight, so that counts like dimension is zero.
Yeah, because there's no lines coming out of it. Okay, so what's the next simplest space? Okay, in the back, what's the next simplest space? Someone in the back, raise their hand. Oh, that's where you're sitting in the back. Okay, you've already go at it. Okay, someone in the middle. Oh, yes, you. What's the next simplest space? Okay, the suggestion is a line. You mean like this? Oh, you mean a line segment. Okay, so a line segment. Well, let's see. So, if you look at the line segment, if we look at it, if you're over here, it looks different than if you're over here. Right? So is that so simple? What do you think? Is this simple? The fact that it looks different in different places? Yeah. In fact, actually, I think that this is not so simple because it looks different in different places. What's something that's simpler than a line segment? Yes. You mean just a line? You need to make that Möbius. Have you get the tape yet? That's the sneak Möbius. Okay. So the next idea is a line. Okay. So it keeps going. I don't have enough time to draw it, so I'll stop at the edge of the board here. So the next suggestion is a line. Well, let me mention one thing which is a little unfortunate about a line. The line goes on forever. I can't draw it, right? It doesn't fit on the board. It's in mathematics we say it's not compact, meaning it's not small. So I'd actually prefer. Now, these guys are too complicated for me. You don't know this, but I'm actually looking for particular answers about. I'm thinking about what we're actually talking about without telling you what we're talking about. It's part of the fun of all this. So, if those guys are not good enough, what's simpler than either of those guys? Here, raise your hand so I can call on you. Yes. Well, okay, yeah, so 2 points. But, you know, this gets boring because then we go to 3, and we wouldn't get anywhere, would we? So we're going to, what I don't like about this is there are different pieces to this. You can break this up into smaller pieces. That's an advantage that the line or line segment we don't have. They really are connected. So after a point, what's the next simplest space, please? Yes. What? Okay, so a ray. Not a stingray, but you mean like a ray like this. Okay. Well, let's look at a ray. So that's a good answer. But the problem is, a ray has both the problems that these guys had. It has one point that looks different than the other point, and it goes on forever. So let's try something else. So what's the next simplest space? Yes, please. Whoa! I don't think so. Okay, the next simplest space. Oh, you're ready to go. Okay, who hasn't had to go? You in the red. What?
A circle.
Yes. In fact, that's the next simplest space. The next simplest space is a circle. And in fact, circles will be our heroes today. You'll see. So we should be familiar with a circle. So a circle. Okay. Well, what's the dimension of a circle? Okay. What? Okay. Why two? Actually, you've already answered. I got to go. So why? What's the dimension of a circle? Please, somebody in the back. Yes, you. Yeah, well, I don't include the inside of it because that would be dimension two, and that's already too complicated. So a circle. So why is it dimension one? Okay, so I agree it's dimension one, but why is that? So let's see, somebody else. Oh, why is it dimension one?
Because it has no surface area.
Okay. Yes, but that's I actually want a positive answer that says what the dimension measures. So why is the circle of dimension one? You've already had to go. Yes, please. Yeah, well, that's a feature of it being compact. So why is it one-dimensional? Yes, you in the far back, loud.
I think it's because it's only length, not width.
Excellent. Yeah, so it's only length. The point is, if you're at a point on the circle, well, first of all, the great thing about a circle is every point looks like every other point. And that's actually a little bit of the secret of what I'm looking for in this talk. So that's why these aren't so good. But the other thing is, if you're at a point in the circle, there's really only 1 degree of freedom. Now, you might say there's two directions to move in, but they're same. They're really back and forth. I count those as one. So this is the same direction because I'm really going along a straight line, whereas this would be another direction. Okay? So this is one-dimensional because if you're at a point on it, there's only 1 degree of freedom, one way in which you can move. And this is important because when we talk about spaces that we cannot visualize, we have to have a way of thinking about them and getting information about them without looking at them from the outside. Okay, that's why we're starting with the simplest ones to get ourselves going. Okay, great. Okay, so what's the next simplest space? So somebody else? Yes, please.
A square.
You mean like the edge of a square, like this? Yes. Is that what you mean? Okay. So, what dimension is this? Do you think? You don't know. Okay. Okay, well, I'll take what I think you said. So he's suggesting the four segments that make up a square. Now, what I want to say, however, is that this is really the same thing as a circle. You see, I'm just looking at these four line segments. And the reason they're the same is, well, you can imagine taking a piece of string and making it into a square, and then you can push it out and rearrange it into a circle. And you really haven't changed anything. You've just changed its appearance. So these four segments, for that matter, the three segments on a triangle, or even the two segments on a loon, are all the same as circles. Okay? So that's not the next most simplest space. So what's the next most simplest space? Yes, please.
A sphere.
Okay, we're moving ahead pretty quickly. Of course, I'm wearing four spheres. So you should, that's sort of a hint. Okay. Okay, so the next simplest space is a sphere. Okay, give me a second. I need to catch my breath. Excellent. Okay, great. So, and I'll agree with you. That's the next simplest space because if you think in one dimension, it turns out this is the only space. It's only one-dimensional space which is compact, which you can't which is somewhat bounded. Oh, so there's someone in the back who needed one more sheet of paper. Are you still there? You still need an extra sheet, or did you get it? You got it. Excellent. Okay, so that's a sphere. So what's the dimension of the sphere? Let's see, the dimension of the sphere. I think you already answered. You already answered. Okay, I'm old, but you haven't answered yet. Yes? You think the sphere is three-dimensional. Okay, so why is this, okay, by the sphere, I mean what you see here, the outside of a ball, like the surface of the earth. So why is it three-dimensional? Well, okay, so right now, I'm on a sphere called the earth, and I'm trying to figure out what the okay, so obviously I can, let's see, where am I at? So I can go north-south. No. North-south this way. I can go north-south. I think this is right. But I can also go east-west. And what's the third direction I can move on a sphere? Up. Not on the sphere. I mean, I'm, you know, it's my feet that are really on the sphere, not me. I'm a being, a three-dimensional being. Yes? And I think you're right. But why? Yes, why? I can't hear her. Please. Silence. Yes, please. Yeah, that's the point. If you're at a point on the sphere, I mean, if you're at a point in the sphere, you have, of course, latitude. You can move north-south on the sphere, and you can move east-west. And you all know, because you look at maps, you can determine a point on a map just using two coordinates, one going east-west and one going north-south. Yes, please? Yeah. The fact that I've chosen that to be north is only because the Earth is spinning. If you choose one direction, there's always another direction you can go in. You don't have to go directly north-south. I mean, good point. Okay, so what I mean by directions, and that's a good question. I didn't make it clear yet. I mean independent directions. So roughly, if I'm going to go back and forth, if I'm going to go forward and backward, independent of that is anything transverse to it. And once you have those two directions, you can make all the other directions from those two. So that's what I mean by dimension. I mean independent directions. So excellent observation. Okay. Again, like I said, you all don't know exactly where I'm getting at, but we're going to figure it out through our question and answers. Okay. So the sphere is two-dimensional because there are 2 degrees of freedom, All right, so what's the next simplest space after the sphere? You've already had a go, later on in the talk I'll start calling out other people because I usually exhaust the audience after a while. So what's the next simplest space after a sphere? So I don't think I've called on you yet, have I? Okay, so I can call on you, can I? This is your first time? Good, tell me the answer then, please. A physical ball, you mean like the Earth in its inside? Okay, well, that's true. That is another space, but the problem is, first of all, the surface is different than the inside. And we're looking for things that look the same everywhere. Also, it's three dimensions, and I don't think I'm ready to go there yet. I mean, we have another hour and a half. So what's the next simplest space after the sphere? It's okay. I mean, I'll come back to people who can't help themselves. What's the next simplest space after a sphere? Okay. Okay. Well, what is it? What?
A cylinder.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's okay. You mean the surface of a cylinder, of course. So here's a cylinder. Okay. And now the cylinder. Notice the cylinder is two dimensions still, which is good because I told you I don't want to go to three yet. But So it is a little more complicated than a sphere, but it's actually a lot more complicated because it has, there are of course two cylinders you can think of. There's the infinite cylinder, and that's infinite, and that's complicated. Or there's the finite cylinder, like the side of a can, and then if you're at this point, it's different than if you're at this point, and I want things that are homogeneous to look the same everywhere. So how about another object which is more complicated than a sphere and just the next most complicated object? So yes? You mean a four-dimensional cube? Well, that's okay. That's a big jump. We all don't want to go to three. So let's see. Yes? No? Have I called on you yet? Have I called on you? Your shot then. Sorry. It's okay. This is just to be fair. I'll call on you next time. You reach him. But he, yes?
The surface area of a donut or a toilet.
Okay, the surface of a donut. Which, of course, everybody. Yeah. By the way, we're going to dissect donuts today. That's
a torus.
Okay, and by this torus, I mean the surface of the torus, or a bagel if you want, but the problem with bagels is they make them so big that they're usually scrunched up, they're usually really no hole anymore, because people like to make sandwiches out of them. But a torus, okay. All right, so how about after a torus? What's the next, so this is also dimension two, because if you're at a point on it, there are two independent directions you can move in. So What's the next simplest after a torus? Yes, please. What? A pyramid. Okay, you mean like one of these guys? You mean a pyramid like this? Okay, so you mean the outside of the pyramid? Okay, yeah, so so we're just thinking of the outside of the pyramid, which is four triangles and one square. Now, if you look at this, though, if you make a pyramid, say, out of rubber, because that's how we're working, you can take a pyramid, you can move it. I mean, you know, think if you have a pyramid out of rubber and you put a little hose in there, you start pumping up full of air. What's going to happen to it after a while? It's going to become a ball. And so what happens is actually this is really the same thing as a sphere from our perspective, because, you know, these corners are just an artifact of how we drew it. But if you think the surface area of it, it really is like a sphere in terms of just its gross topological properties. Okay, but that's a good question. I usually get at least one of those in this talk. Yes? What do you mean by a multi-torus? You mean like this? Is that what you mean? No. What? No, I actually know what he's asking. I'm trying to get some consternation from the audience. Okay. So what do you, okay. Yeah. What do you mean by double torus? Okay. Yeah. So what you really mean? I know what you mean. You mean this. That's what you mean, okay. And that is more complicated, because how many holes does this have?
One.
How about this one? Excellent. Okay, so what's the next one? What's the next simplest space? No, it's a pretzel. So let's see if I can draw this correct. People like their pretzels like this, so it's a pretzel. Let's see. And then, so the next simplest space is a pretzel. Okay. How about after that? Is it stop here, or what's the next most simplest space? Two pretzels. No, I want things that are connected. What's the next simplest space? Does it end here? No. What's the next one? Come on, someone new, please. There's a lot of basic knowledge in this group. Come on. What's the next simplest space after a pretzel? Okay. Actually, that's probably not very good. It's stale. But we have lots of time. Yes. A what? A what pretzel? What's a window pretzel? Oh, I see. Like a window frame. Yeah, well, in fact, actually, since I don't really care how things look, the next simplest space would be this, which is a four-hole torus. And if you look at this, you can keep going. So I'll put some ellipses here. This keeps going. These are all two-dimensional. Okay. And and you can see this keeps going. I mean, we don't have enough time to list all of them, but we know what happens. But now I want to ask you a question. Now, we drew the sphere, we drew the torus, we drew the two torus, we drew the pretzel, and we went on to whatever. This looks like some monster from outer space. We keep going, and implicit in doing this is the assumption that these are different, or that these are different. And I want to ask you, how do we know that they're different? I mean, they're both two-dimensional. If you're walking around with them, how do you tell they're different? Here, I'll let you. How do you tell they're different?
More pits to fall into.
More pits to fall. Well, how do you know that? Okay, so here comes the problem. So, inside of the space we live in, we've drawn these. These are objects which are intrinsic. They exist in our imagination outside of space. They can be described. I mean, for instance, well, you'll see some examples here. I won't get other examples, but they exist somehow intrinsic in you know, outside of our imagination. And how do we know that the reason that these look different because they're stuck into three space differently? How do we know that they actually are different? I mean, that's sort of the rub of all this. Yes.
Look.
What?
The look of it.
No, that's not good enough. Because just okay, they look like they do it because they're sitting inside a three dimensional space that we live in, and we see that. But if you're sitting on the surface of one, it's not easy. I mean, how do you tell that they're different if you're just on there? If you can't look outside of there in three space, if you're just literally on the surface, how would you tell that they're different if they are indeed different? You can't answer that.
I have a question because I'm confused.
You're confused.
Can you give an example of two things that look different to us in three space, even though they're the same?
Well, I could draw a mechanism and tell you about the configuration space of the mechanism, but it's rather hard to. This is okay. I know what I'm doing. Okay. It's always great when the organizer second guesses you. No, it's okay. Yeah. I'm not getting answers on this for good reason. This is actually hard. Everything we've done before, people more or less knew they didn't look at it this way. But this is actually where a new idea has to come in. And in fact, determining that these are different goes to the very beginning of our study of spaces. So some of the first real theorems about topology will lead us to understanding why these are different. So the answer is, okay, this is hard. So equal or not equal is hard. Okay. So it's no surprise that we didn't really know what to do. The way you tell two things are different is you find a property that they have, one has and the other doesn't have. So for instance, what's your name?
Logan.
So Logan, I'm Frank. So because each of us has a property called a name that's different, you know we're different people. Of course, you know that for other reasons, but you particularly know it because we have different names. There's a property that we have which is different. So what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to find something that's true for the sphere and not true for the torus, or vice versa. Yes?
The torus has a tear in it.
A tear in it?
In order to make a sphere for
torus, well, no, that could be a fault of your construction. We're going to find something that's more intrinsic than how you might try to put it together. I mean, you're observing that you can take a sphere and you try to punch the two sides in and then cut it and repaste it together. Okay? Yes? Well, those are geometric properties. We're really going to talk about just the property of the surface area because, you know, I could draw a small box, a really low flat box, and I could talk about the surface of that. And the surface of that is the same thing as a sphere, yet it's also flattened. So it's not geometry. We need to look at something a little more fundamental than geometry. And so I don't expect it. I mean, you're not supposed. I mean, some people may know the answer, but here's the answer. So we need to do some mathematics. And so the answer, the beginning of the answer, it's due to a guy called Camille Jordan, and from 1887. So he proved the following theorem, and we're going to take this because I don't want to do that. We don't have time for that. He said that a simple closed curve in the plane. And we'll have to figure out what all this means. In the plane, divides it. Okay. So what is? So let me try to explain to you what these mean. So a curve is just something that's one dimensional, like everything I've been drawing on the board here is a curve. Closed means because it starts and ends at the same point. It has no beginning and no end. This is closed. This is not closed. Okay. So that's what closed is and not closed. So what's simple? Well, this is not simple because it crosses itself. This is simple. And let's see, I don't need this for now because we all remember what a sphere and a torus look like. And here's another one. Here's another curve I'm going to draw for you. This is simple. Okay, so these are simple, and that's not simple. Okay, because other than this mistake I made, since I'm a mathematician and not an artist, it has no end, and it's simple. Now, however, that doesn't mean it's so easy to understand what goes on, and that's actually why this is a real theorem. Because what he says is that if you take a simple closed curve in the plane, it has an inside and an outside, and these are two pieces. It divides it actually into two pieces. You can see that there's the inside and the outside. The outside is easy. That's the part that goes off to infinity. And the inside, well, that's the compact part. So here, on this simple closed curve, you can ask, you know, so this is either the inside or the outside. Do you know which one it is? Yeah, well, okay, well, there's a trick to figuring out the outside. This is actually on the outside because you can go in through here, and there, that's the outside. And what happens, so if you had a pair of scissors, they have to be very strong ones to cut the board. You cut the board in along this curve, it'll fall into two pieces, and there'll be an inside and an outside. Okay? And that's the Jordan curve theorem. And that's a fundamental property of the plane. Okay? So now that we've talked about the plane, I want to use the Jordan curve theorem to understand why the sphere is different from the torus. But there's a problem already. This is on the plane, and you remember no one suggested when I asked something more complicated than a circle the plane. But that's an answer I often get because you know the plane is two dimensional, but it's infinite in extent, so it's really different than the sphere. However. And this is a really great trick. It was discovered by cartographers a long, long time ago. Is that the difference between the sphere and the plane? There's almost no difference between them. And the idea is something called. Hope you can read this. I hope I can spell it actually. Stereographic. It's actually really hard to spell at the board. Projection. And I ran out of space. So what this is. It's a way to match up a sphere with the plane mostly. So take a sphere. By the way, this also works with the circle. And then take a sphere. You know, imagine the Earth and of course dropping it onto the plane of the ecliptic. So, you know, you have to lift it up, I guess, because it's actually in the plane. And you draw a plane on it where they're touching at one point. So this is a sphere and this is the plane. Now. I'll take advantage of the fact that we consider the North Pole of the sphere. And now imagine taking a line through the North Pole into the sphere, and then it exits the sphere somewhere, and then comes on, and it's eventually going to hit the plane somewhere. Now just imagine, sphere, North Pole, line, it hits the North Pole, and it's going to hit the plane that the sphere is sitting on somewhere. And what happens here is that this allows us to match up a point on the sphere with a point on the plane. Can you see this? You're going to line through the North Pole. It hits the sphere at one spot, and it'll hit the plane. And, in fact, this is actually a really good matching because, first of all, you see, if I move this point of the plane a little bit, the point of the sphere is only going to move a little bit. So it's continuous in that sense. Also, if you take any point on the sphere and you draw the line from the North Pole to that point, since the North Pole is the highest point of the sphere, this point is lower, that line is going to be dropping. And so that line, as you move along the line, it's going to drop, and eventually it's going to hit the plane somewhere. We don't know where, but somewhere. So every point on the sphere gets matched to a point on the plane, almost. What doesn't get matched to the plane under stereographic projection? Did you have a go yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, someone else. I think I already asked you. So who else has, come on, what doesn't get matched to the... I think I called on you nearly the first, okay? Sorry. You know, I'll save you for the end, okay? What does it... Okay, back there. Well, okay, if I take the equator here, I can draw a line from the North Pole to the equator. It's inside the sphere there. It exits the sphere, and it's going to hit the plane somewhere. So the equator does get matched. In fact, the equator gets matched to a big circle, in fact. Yes? Well, the South Pole is touching the plane, so when I drop something directly from the North Pole to the South Pole, that's the point it's going to get matched to. That's the only one that gets matched to the same point. Okay, anybody else? Yes?
The North Pole.
The North Pole loses out. So what this means is, okay, what stereographic projection means is that if you take, and you want to think, is it the sphere minus a point equals the plane? And so anything you know about the sphere mostly many things you know about the sphere, you can transfer to the plane and vice versa. Okay. I mean, there's just one point you have to choose to throw away, and you make that the North Pole. So if you have something on the sphere and there's a point you don't need to worry about, you can make it equal to the plane by stereographic projection. And, I mean, that's the basic idea of maps. It's also the reason why maps have problems, because near the pole things are heavily distorted. Okay. So now what the question is, suppose I have no color chalk. It doesn't matter. Don't go running off. Okay, suppose I have a curve here in the plane. What I can do is I can take this curve, and under stereographic projection, I can lift it to some curve, bad chalk day, on the sphere. So a curve on the plane, it's okay. I've done what I needed. Okay, the curve on the plane can get lifted to a curve on the sphere. So I can talk about a simple closed curve on the sphere. And anything I know about the plane, I can transfer to the sphere. So in particular, the Jordan curve theorem has an equivalent statement for the sphere. And it says that a simple closed curve on, sorry about my handwriting, it's really bad. It's actually bad on the sphere. Divides it. It's the same statement. Now, it divides it into two, but I just divides it is good enough. So now, why are these the same statement? Well, if you draw a simple closed curve on the sphere, I'm just going to give you the discussion of this. If you draw a simple closed curve on the sphere like this one, you pick some point that's not on that curve. Make that the North Pole and do a stereographic projection, and you get a simple closed curve on the plane. Now, on the plane, we have the Jordan curve theorem that tells us that a simple closed curve on the plane, it has an inside and an outside. Okay? On the plane, we have inside and outside, which is rather special. But now then, if I can look it back on the sphere, and the inside goes to some region on the sphere, and the outside goes to a region on the sphere that contains the North Pole. Right? Notice the outside here is special because it's where the North Pole is. Now, the North Pole was somehow a choice, but the point is that the Jordan curve theorem, which is for the plane, also tells us about the sphere. Okay, and that's actually what we're going to try to use to determine if things are different, but I think we need a break right now. So what we're all going to do is everybody's going to go, okay, here are the instructions, okay? We have to do this in orderly fashion. Okay. It's going to be snack time. A moment. But everybody's going to have to come back. Whatever snack you get, people are going to have to come back with a plate, a knife, a napkin for cleanliness because it's a mess, and either a donut or an apple. Okay. Don't eat. Okay. Because we're going to dissect those creatures. And just like in biology class, where you don't eat the worm, you don't eat the donut before you've dissected it. So,
before.
Bring it back here, whole, intact.
You can eat a worm if you
said yes, if you want to. I wouldn't recommend it. But yes.
Silly question, but is a non-simple closed curve also divides?
Yes, I know.
Okay. All right.
But this is important. This is important because I'm going to talk about genus, and I need simple closed curves for that. because you can always once you cross yourself, you stop, and then it's a simple closed curve. Oh boy, is this any good? Okay, let's take this home. Okay, so I don't need these guys. Oh, I had extra tape. Yes.
Is there anything simpler than a circle?
A point.
Oh.
So you should realize that my definition of simple is it's something I have in mind, and I'm only allowing certain objects to be talked about. So for the purpose of this lecture, a point is the only thing simpler than a circle. There's a technical term that I'm not going to use in the lecture as one of the things I'm looking at, though. But that's a good question. All right. Well, it depends. I mean, it depends. It may be your choice. But not before. And I guess I should have mentioned that, that there aren't enough, there actually may not be enough donuts for everybody, so the adults shouldn't be taking them necessarily. The students need to have them to dissect, because that's, it's kind of like in class. The teacher doesn't get the easy one. They'll just have to demonstrate it. Actually, but I'm going to have to demonstrate it. Okay. Okay.
What comes next? Trust that I'm honored. What?
So this stereographic projection of a punctured sphere, right? That's a,
yeah, that's exactly
it's
what...
It's a bijection?
Yes. It's a homeomorphism. It's even better.
Homeomorphism. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it's a continuous bijection with a continuous inverse.
Okay. Oh, okay. So then how will you draw the maps then? Because the maps, they can't be like a whole plane, right? So
well, you've seen lots of maps in your life, right?
So they just...
So have you ever noticed that maps never cover the whole sphere?
Oh, it doesn't?
When have you seen a map that contains both the north... It contains every point of the Earth on it.
I'm not too sure. Yeah, the globe obviously has it.
But the globe is not flat. You can do that on a globe, but a flat map, how do you... You're always missing something. In fact, you're usually missing quite a bit because of distortion.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's interesting. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. All right. I should have brought my real knife along.
Well, if you're good. Don't leave. We're about ready to get started. So is everybody back? If you're not back, shout, please. Okay. Some people don't understand directions. Okay. Well, let's get started again. Okay. Everybody. Super. Okay. So now, what we're going to do is we're going to do an experiment. I believe experimentation is important in mathematics. So first of all, okay. So what we're gonna do? Okay, what we're gonna do? Don't do anything yet, because just like in dissection class, they show you the work what you're gonna do get before you do it. Is we're gonna dissect our objects, and the goal is to understand the behavior of simple closed curves on our objects. So now, for the purpose of the mathematics, the object with the apple, it's the skin of the apple. That's what we're thinking about. Those with apples. By the way, those with apples get to go first. So the object of the apple is the skin of the apple, because that's basically a sphere. The object of the donut is the surface of the donut. And they should have holes in them. That was the instructions. So what I'd like everybody to do who has a sphere, okay, I'd like you to try and take your knife and see if you can cut a simple. Be careful with it because you could hurt yourself. These are sharp. See if you can cut a simple closed curve on the donut on the surface of the sphere. So everybody, go ahead and do it. And what happens? So done. Cut a simple closed curve on it. Don't cut the knife into yourself. If you slip, it'll actually cut. So when you're done, when people are done, put your hands up so I know enough people have finished this so we can talk about it. Okay, you done yet? Okay, great. So now, if you did what I did, so I cut a simple closed curve on my apple. Okay, I just did this. I don't care about the center of it. That's too bad for the apple cells there. But I basically, here's a simple closed curve, and indeed, it divides it into two pieces. Did everybody get that? Is the surface of your apple in two pieces? Good. That means we haven't found a counterexample of Jordan's theorem yet. So okay, good. Well, it's possible. Okay, you can also cut do this, and now it doesn't fall apart. But you can see that there's an inside and an outside, inside outside. Actually, no, you can't actually tell the difference. But there are two points. This curve I just cut divides the surface of the apple into two pieces. Right, because and you can see that it's more fun like this because it's a bite-sized piece. Okay. Anyway, so now everybody with the donuts, we have an experiment. It's a technical challenge. Let me write it on the board so everybody's clear about the instructions. So technical challenge. So can you? Find a non-dividing simple closed curve on your donut. Okay, so that's a challenge. I want you to think about it before you make your cut. Just like an artist, you want to think about where you're going to cut. But can you find a way to cut this so you have a non-dividing simple closed curve? Now, obviously, if you just do this.
and cut this piece off like you're seeing here, you're going to get a simple closed curve that's going to divide it into two pieces. So I'd like you to try to see if you can find a simple closed curve that doesn't divide it. Yeah. So it should be just one loop, and it does, and the surface does not break into two pieces. So think about it. Look at your donut and think about it. I'm gonna wait for everybody to get this done. So there's a couple minutes to go. That's why I'm gonna wait. Most people will succeed. I'll wait till everybody succeeds, and then we'll talk about it. You have to be careful. This is a precision exercise. Yeah. So let's see. Okay. Okay. Have most people figured this out yet? Well, not okay. Yeah. So now, of course, the answer is there. Okay. One thing to realize: there's many ways to do this. So hold, can you stand in front of the class? Just stand up in front of the class. Hold yours up so people can see the gap. Hold it up. No, pull it apart a little bit so people can see it. Okay. So there's one. Thank you. Okay. So there's one. So what's your name?
Audrey.
So Audrey came up with this simple closed curve. And notice that this does not divide the surface of the donut. Because if I'm over here, I can just go around to come back to it. Did anybody find a cut that was significantly different than this? What did you do? Oh, he went a Ginsu knife on it, I guess. Okay, that happens. Okay, did anybody find another simple closed curve that's different than this one? Okay, yeah, well, okay, so for instance, for those, okay, so here's another one. I'm going to cut mine in a simple closed curve. And you see that it starts and ends at the same point, and the surface doesn't fall apart. Okay, and that's another way to do it. Let me draw this. It's actually kind of, bad chalk day. Sorry. So here's another one, but you know, there are lots. So here's one of my favorite. I'm going to see if I can actually draw this properly. I start here, and I go around there to the inside, and then I come up here to the outside, and I come around here. You can see that I go through the hole, and I come around, and I come up again. This is another simple closed curve that doesn't divide it. And there's actually a lot more than that, but I'm not good enough to draw them. So, well, in particular, what we have here is, experimentally, you found a non-dividing simple closed curve. So on the torus, there exists a non-dividing simple closed curve. Yet on the sphere, Jordan tells us that every simple closed curve divides it. So here we have a property which is different between the torus and the sphere. Every simple closed curve on the sphere divides the surface into two pieces. Yet on the torus, there exists at least one, and in fact many, simple closed curves which are not divided. And so that's the proof that these guys are not equal. That answers the question we started about 30 minutes ago on, as to how we tell the difference between these two objects. What we have is we have a property that this has, or one of these has that the other one doesn't, and this property can be understood if you're just living on the surface, if you can't rise above it or look at it from outside like we are. So this is the beginning of how we begin to tell things apart. We find a property that one has that the other does not. And in fact, you should all go ahead and eat your donuts or your apples. Two simple closed curves which do divide it. Right? Notice? That's important. Okay. Well, In fact, actually,
This leads to a definition which allows us to classify surfaces. So definition. So the genus of a surface is, and this is, we'll call use G for that, is the maximum number of disjoint, non-dividing, simple closed curves. Curves on it. On the genus of a surface S on S. Okay. So this is a property that a surface has. And now it may be hard initially without knowing more about this to know when you've drawn enough. But let's just start here. So on a sphere, what's the genus of a sphere? How many simple closed curves can you draw in a sphere that don't divide it into two pieces?
Zero.
The genus is zero because everyone does. How about the torus?
Infinity.
Well, we have to think about this a little bit. So now we know that if we draw this simple closed curve, it'll divide it into two pieces. Okay? And now, well, it won't divide. It'll be non-dividing. But now we get to do what you've all been wanting to do, which is open up your donut into a cylinder. Okay, you can open up to a cylinder, and so what I mean is I want to try to draw another simple closed. I know the genus is at least one, so it's bigger than or equal to one. To show it's exactly one, we have to show we can't do any more. So now, you might think, well, here's another one. But these two together break into two pieces, just like my bite. Okay. These intersect, so that's no good either. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut it here, I'm going to open up to a cylinder, and now you think about the cylinder. If I have a simple closed curve in the cylinder, it either ends up going around the cylinder once, and if it does that, then it breaks the cylinder into two pieces, or if it doesn't go around the cylinder, it looks like this, and then I can take out my trusty scissors here, which I didn't bring today, and cut along the back of the cylinder and make it into a piece of the plane, and then now my simple closed curve is here. So, okay, let me say this again. If I want to draw a second simple closed curve on the torus, I take my first one and I open it up into a cylinder, then I look at my second curve. Either the second curve goes around, and that clearly breaks it into two, or if it doesn't go around, then I can cut along the back and I get just a piece of the plane, and now I have a simple closed curve in the plane, and that breaks the plane into two pieces. So whatever way you cut it, you can't draw another circle on there. And while that's not a proof, it should be good enough for today. So this is genus 1. Whoa, it's alive. Okay, so how about this guy? What genus does this one have? Yeah, so people think it's 2, and let's check it out. So obviously, I mean, this is not a proof because one has to work a little harder for proofs, but this is just Saturday morning. So if we do this, you see here are two simple closed curves that are disjoint and they don't divide it. But if I try to draw another one, it's going to break it up into two pieces. So this is 2. And in fact, actually, now we know what we meant by holes. Remember, we first started writing these surfaces and we talked about a torus, a double torus, which is a two-hole torus, a pretzel, which is a three-hole torus, and so on. And I made the claim that these holes may just be an artifact of how we're looking at it. And, I mean, in fact, they are. If for this torus, you think this is the hole. But if you're inside the torus, you'll think this is the hole, if you think about it, and you should. But what happens is this notion of hole is extrinsic. It's how it sits. It's how it's sitting in space. But this notion of genus is intrinsic to the surface. You can understand it just by being on the surface. And this is how we classify surfaces. And this was done, I mean, maybe without the Jordan curve theorem, but it was essentially done around the time of Riemann, which is 160 years ago or 150 years ago. this classification of surfaces by their genus. Okay, so now, now what I want to do is I want to, let's see. I'd like to discuss some spaces, particularly one space in particular, which is hard to visualize, and try to understand it a little bit. But before I do that, I want to, I want to look at my notes for a second, because I have some keys to what goes on at different points here. okay, great. So what I'd like to do is I'd like us to construct and understand another space. This is called lines in R3. Actually, before I do that, I'm going to look at the space of all directions. Okay. So what a direction is. So earlier people mentioned rays. And what I'd like to do, I'd like to think about directions in three-dimensional space, say from the origin. And so I come equipped with an origin called my shoulder joint. And if I think about a direction from my shoulder joint is given by just pointing my arm in some direction. Right? This is somehow the space of directions. I could try to draw it on the board, but it's rather two-dimensional. You have an origin here, and you think about the directions you have from space. And so what are all the directions you have in space? So is there any way to understand them? So let me talk you through this, because this is the start of what we're doing next. Yes? Well, there's a lot of them. So what I like to think of it as I'm going to replace my arm will tell us the directions because for one thing, the tip of my finger tells you the direction coming from the origin. Now, this is not a perfect joint. I'm hanging from trees, not doing math lectures is how we evolved. So I can't really put it around back that way, but it's a good enough approximation wherever my finger is, this gives me a direction in space. And the question is, where does my finger lie if I move it around about my arm joint, the tip of my finger? Anybody? What? Okay, every time the tip of my finger gives me a direction from my shoulder joint, and the question, what are the possible directions? So that can be transferred into asking, what are the possible places that my finger could be on my on my arm for my shoulder joint? Yes? Radius 1 cubit or 1 arm length, which is a little less than a meter. Yeah. So what's your name?
Pia.
I'm sorry?
Pia.
Pia points out that if I take a sphere of radius my arm length, centered at my shoulder, then every point in that sphere gives me a direction. Even the ones that I can't point to. Okay, I have to do those. How do I spell your name?
PIA.
Oh, that's what I thought. I just didn't want to make a mistake. So Pia's theorem is that directions in R3 are the same thing as the sphere, which I'll call S2 for the two-dimensional sphere. Okay, so what we've just done is I talked about something very abstractly, directions in space, and with a little bit of thought, not too much, but this is a warm-up, we're able to identify them with an object we've been looking at for quite a long time, like since you walked into this room because of my shirt, that the directions in space can be thought of as a sphere. So something which is somewhat abstract, and you don't think of this as being a space, you can put it together and identify it with some other space, and so we think of the directions as a space. Even though you may just think of them as directions. So the directions in R3 are exactly the two-sphere. So with that warm-up, let's talk about lines in R3. So here, again, lines through the origin in R3. So here's 0. So lines through the origin. Okay. So, a line through the origin is something like this. And now, I'd like to try to understand how we can think of the set of the space of lines through the origin as actually as a space. And you can imagine, I mean, in some sense, it's like a space because if I have one line, you can talk about nearby lines. Of course, there are lines that are further away, and you know, but you can talk about it. You can consider what it means for one line to be near another line. The first question you could ask is, what's the dimension of this? Maybe I should have asked it over here. Even here, let's go back to here. How do we know that this is two-dimensional before we identify it as the sphere? So let me just show you. I know it's two-dimensional because if I pick any direction, you can see that I have two independent degrees of freedom from there. You know, it's easier if I do this because you can think of back and forth and up and down. But so even before we identified directions with the sphere, we can tell that they're both two-dimensional. So how about lines to the origin? How many dimensions does this have? Yes? No, not the line. I'm not talking about, this line is a one-dimensional object, but I'm talking about the set of all lines to the origin, the collection of all lines. How many degrees of freedom do you have to move around in the space of all lines to the origin? Well, I don't know. I'm not asking numbers. You know, 360 is just arbitrary. You could say 2 pi, but actually it's different. It's actually 4 pi. Actually, it's 2 pi, in fact, because it's only half the sphere. But yes? Yeah, exactly. So what's your name again? OJ says the dimension is 2, and the reason it's the same as this, because if you have a line in space, there's 2 degrees of freedom. Because it's really the same as directions. You can forget about the fact it's a line, just look at the direction there, and this direction is 2, you know, nearby, every direction nearby this one gives us a line. Of course, the same is true over here. That makes it more interesting. So this is two-dimensional, and let's try to see if we can understand this. Now, it turns out that this is much harder than that, because here we had a ready-made space to look at. And here we're going to have to somehow construct it by pieces. But just bear with me. I'm going to think of lines. There are two kinds of lines. There are lines of high slope. So, you know, those are the lines that are pointing mostly at the ceiling, or likewise at the floor. And there are lines of low slope. And for lines of low slope, I'm going to do over here in the middle because I need a little more space. That's the one that's a little more complicated, and that's why you need to make a Möbius band. So lines of low slope. Okay. So now, to pick out lines of high slope, let's just imagine that, let's consider a cylinder, just the top of a cylinder. In fact, actually, I'm going to put a cylinder around the origin, with the origin kind of in the center of a cylinder. I'm going to use this cylinder to tell me what I mean by high and low slope lines. So now notice that if I have any line through the origin has to go through the cylinder in two points. It's either going to pierce the top of the cylinder, it's going to be high slope, or it's going to pierce the side of the cylinder, it's low slope, and there's a little bit of overlap. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to describe each of these two pieces separately and then figure out what to do on the overlap. Okay, that's somehow scissor topology. So first of all, lines of high slope, well, it'll go through the top and the bottom of the cylinder, so it'll pierce this. There'll be two points, but I'm going to forget about the bottom point. I'm going to think about the top point. Any point on the top, which is really just a plate, gives me a line through the origin. And those are so what I can do is I can identify high slope lines. These can be identified with a disk. A disk. Now, here, the disk has a border, namely the lines of intermediate slope. Okay, so this is different than the spaces we're looking at, but I'm going to glue things together along here. So high slope lines are just a disk, like your plate. So how about low slope lines? These are a little harder to look at, but let me see if I can make this picture right. I'm not an artist, I'm just a mathematician. So what I want to do is, and I wish I'd brought scissors, but maybe I can do this here. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I want to think of this. Don't take your Möbius band apart because you're going to need it. I can think of the back half of my cylinder, which is sort of your Möbius band, as I'm going to draw it like this. Now I'm going to notice if you have a line of low slope. So if it goes through say the I'll draw it here. If it goes through say the back of this. Goes to the origin, and eventually it enters. Oh, I've already cut it. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Normally, I just have a bag with a bunch of junk with me, and I didn't bring it all with me. So if I have a line of low slope, think about it. If it doesn't go through the top, it's going to enter and leave the sides of the can, enter one side and leave the other side of the side of the can. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at just the back half of the can, which is this. And notice that any point in the back half of the can gives me a line from that point to the origin, and that's one of my lines of low slope. Wherever my origin is, where's my origin today? I guess my origin's there. That's a line of low slope. And now, of course, I have lines of intermediate slope here. And notice that this top of the cylinder gives me a different line. This top of the strip gives me a different lines than the bottom of the strip, because the ones at the top slope down towards you, and the ones at the bottom slope up towards you. You can see that. So those are different lines. But however, on the edge here where I've cut it, if I take the line through this corner, okay, well, this is where my drawing is bad. It's going to go through this corner. So that's my origin. The line that goes from over here is going to come down through here. You can imagine, again, I need a can, but you can see the one going through this point is going to go through this point. And likewise, the one that goes through this point, say an inch down, is going to go through this point an inch up. So what's going to happen is if I want to describe the lines of low slope, I can start with this strip, but what I have to do is I have to identify the lines here, the points here in the strip. You know, every point here gives the line through this point here also goes through a point over here. But when I identify them, I have to twist them, give a half twist. You see that? The line down here gets glued to the line up, gets identified the line up there. So to identify them, I need to do a half twist. And is there tape left? Could someone put this back together for me? Here, just go. Here, go ahead. Thanks. Can you do that? Actually, the masking tape is better because I can draw on it. No, you'll need that. Okay, so what happens is the lines of low slope, these are our Möbius band. So what we have, if I want to look at all lines, I'm going to borrow your Möbius band for a second. I'm not going to do anything to it. Okay, so when we look at all lines, our lines look like the union of the Möbius band and the plate. Okay, and they get stuck together somehow to make the whole space of lines. Now, it's hard to see how that happens, but we can understand something qualitatively about it. First of all, what's the boundary of the disk? It's the circle. Remember, the circle is the hero of this talk today. Okay, how about the boundary of a Möbius band? How many edges does a Möbius band have? It looks like two to me. How many? It has one. In fact, yeah, because if you go around it, and you should all trace it. When you come around once, you've come back to the other side. And you do this, you come back to where you started. So the Möbius band, its boundary is also a circle. Thank you. So the way you get all lines to the origin is you take the Möbius band and the disk, and you glue them together along this circle. So lines in R3, the way we identify them is we're going to think of them. These look like the Möbius band. The Möbius band. Plus the disk, and glued along their boundary circles. So that's how we identify the lines in space. Now, you can't visualize this in three-dimensional space. It's a theorem. You can't put this object in three-dimensional space without it crossing itself in a really, really ugly way. There are sculptures which show this, but you can stare at them and still not understand it. I know I've tried. However, we have a description of this space. Now I'd like to, and this is a space we cannot visualize, but we can describe. It's two-dimensional. It's not one of the ones we're looking at because it has an additional annoying property I won't want to get into. But what I want to do now is, we can ask, however, what, okay, this has a name, by the way. It's called, the name of the space is called RP2. It's called the real, because it's over the real numbers, projective plane. I mean, I suspect several people are familiar with the projective plane. Have you ever done an activity with it or thought about it? Well, you should. Anyways, but this object here is the real projective plane. I'm not going to try to get into that, but that's the name of it. And
a question we can ask is what is its genus? So what? Yeah. Okay. So the question is, what was the definition of genus? Does anybody remember? I've erased it already. What was the definition of genus? Yes, please.
The number of closed curves
that excellent. It's the maximum number of non-dividing simple closed curves. So, okay. So let's try to think about RP2. It has these two pieces. The Möbius band in the disk. So I can't really draw the Möbius band very well, although I wish I should have drawn one just the beginning to get this right. But I can't draw them. I'm not an artist. But this is a little hard. What is the genus of it? Well, now, we know that we glue the disk and the Möbius band together along a circle. And so if we cut along the circle, it falls into two pieces. One is the disk and one is the Möbius band. Right? So you might think the genus is zero, because we drew on a simple closed curve, namely the one where we glue them together, and it breaks into two pieces. But remember, you know, the genus is the maximum possible number. Just like if you were to take a bite out of your donut, an unfortunate bite as opposed to the smart one we did, it would fall into two pieces along a simple closed curve. But that's only because you took the wrong simple closed curve. So it turns out that here, this is important. So this is where I'm going to need my Möbius band again and a writing utensil. Super. So a Möbius band and a writing utensil. Okay, so here. So now your Möbius band, it has this funny thing Okay, so what we're going to do is the Möbius band, you know, something funny is happening around the edges, but the center of the Möbius band is somehow symmetric. And in fact, actually, so I'd like everybody to do the following. So on your Möbius band, start and draw. Just draw this. Draw through the center of your Möbius band. You've already excellent. Okay. So now, when you've gone all the way around again. Okay. So I started here and I went drawing, and when I came over to here, I went around all the way. I'm back where I started again. Okay. Now, notice it. Okay. So now the way I want you to think about your Möbius band. Now you're gonna naturally want to view it as something with two sides. In particular, that this here is different than that there, even at the same point. But we're going to think about the Möbius band as something that's purely two-dimensional. This means that this line you've drawn here also appears on the back, because I want to think of this line as being drawn in the Möbius band, not on it. On it is a feature of it being in three-dimensional space. Okay, and this line that we've drawn, this line, it has a special name. It's called the medial circle. I had to give it a name because we're going to talk about it. The medial circle. Every Möbius band has one, and it starts here, and you go around the Möbius band exactly once, and you get back to where you started again, and that's the end of the circle. It's not the end. It starts and ends at the same point, so it's truly a circle. Now, the important thing to remember is that Notice that I started here and stopped here. I didn't continue drawing because if I were to draw here, I'd be repeating myself. Because again, I want you to view this line as being in the Möbius band and not on it. Being on it is what we see being in three-dimensional space, but the Möbius band is just a two-dimensional object. So this is really this point here is the same as this point here on the Möbius band. We're going to think about it mathematically and not actually as a physical object. So that's called the medial circle. So now, I don't want you to do the following, but notice, okay, now imagine the Möbius band is sitting inside of RP2. So we have the Möbius band, and we sort of stuck onto it this plate. So now I want you to imagine, but don't do it, if you were to take scissors and cut your Möbius band along the medial circle, okay, what's going to happen to the projective, to RP2, yes? It's going to what? What's going to happen is I have this disc over here that I'm gluing to this edge to, and if I cut right here, it looks like I have two sides here. This side gets glued to one part of the disc, and this side gets glued to the other part of the disc, so it's not going to fall apart because it's still going to be attached along the disc. And in fact, if you know something, so So let me summarize this, and then I'm going to relate this to real projective plane. So cutting. Okay, actually, here I'll say something. The medial circle does not divide RP2 because when you cut along it, it's the two pieces you think you have locally are still attached to the disk, and the disk is still one piece. Now, briefly, for people who know something about the projective plane, it's all the points in the plane together with a line at infinity, and the line at infinity is like one very large circle. So you can imagine if you take the real projective plane and you cut the line at infinity out of the way, you're going to get the usual plane back again, and the usual plane is one piece. So if you take the line at infinity out of RP2, it doesn't divide. If you take the medial circle out of RP2, it doesn't divide, because the medial circle really is just the line at infinity, so to speak. I mean, not just so to speak. It really is, if you think about it. Okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do a little shift in our way of viewing the Jordan curve theorem. So this is a new way to think about Jordan curve. So consider a simple closed curve, and in the plane, by the way, this is okay because we can do the same thing in the sphere, and it has an inside and an outside. Now imagine, okay, since it has an inside, I could move the curve towards the inside a little bit. Maybe a little bit more in some places, but a little bit less in others, like this. I can move it towards the inside, and I can keep going, moving it towards the inside, and I can shrink it to a point just inside the inside. And now if I'm on a sphere, if you draw a simple closed curve on the sphere, you pick one of the two sides. Like if this simple closed curve on this sphere, I can pick this side and I can start to stretch it and shrink it over the sphere, finally down to a point. Something about the Jordan curve theorem. Another way of viewing it. This is special for the sphere. Is that every curve on the sphere can be shrunk to a point. More generally, if you have a okay, so that's and this turns out to be so. In particular, when I was in graduate school and someone proved this Jordan curve theorem, they proved this immediately afterwards because that's what we really wanted. So this is the fact. It's the same thing as the Jordan curve theorem. And let's do a little bit of thought experiment back to our torus. So on our torus, this circle here, here's the circle that was non-dividing. Can we shrink that to a point? Can you take the circle, staying on the surface of the torus, shrink it to a point? You can certainly do that to this circle, but this one right here that goes around it? Well, let's think about that. If you could shrink it to a point, just imagine what it, like this one, as I shrink to a point, it's going to fill up this little disk. And this disk is going to be one of the pieces of the surface. If I could shrink this to a point, somehow as it sweeps itself to a point, it would pull up a piece of the surface that would be separated from the rest. It turns out that this can't be shrunk to a point, so you can't shrink this. In fact, you can't shrink non-dividing circles. That's a fact. So what I'd like us to do now, this is the second to last activity. You need a writing utensil for this. I'd like everybody to take their Möbius band, and we're gonna investigate whether we can. So I made a claim that if it's not dividing, we can't shrink it to a point. But let's check that here with the Möbius band. So what I'd like us to do is take your circle, and
where your circle starts, pick a direction and draw an arrow in that direction. And what we're going to do is let me explain. We're going to try to think about if we can shrink this circle to a point, if we can shrink the circle in the Möbius band. Now, clearly, the Möbius band turns out, we can shrink the whole Möbius band to that circle. And much like a cylinder, this tells us that you really can't shrink this circle staying on the Möbius band. So if we're going to shrink the circle to a point, we have to move it off the Möbius band. Remember, the RP2 was this guy plus the Möbius. And so if I want to try to shrink this medial circle, if I can move the circle into the disk, then I can shrink it in the disk because the disk can be shrunk. And so we're going to do a little experiment. We're going to take a point of the medial circle and just pick one of the two edges you want to try to push it off to. We're going to imagine trying to take this circle in the Möbius band and push it off the Möbius band into the disk. So I've drawn this arrow here, and I want you to just, since I'm moving it in this direction, the nearby points also have to go in this direction, and I want you to just go around exactly once and keep doing it. Just pay attention to which direction you're moving it to. So I'm just going to draw this collection of arrows. I hope you can see that. Some of the tape's a little hard to draw on, but you can continue past the tape. And I want you to stop when you've gone around exactly once, like I have here. Okay? But exactly once. I don't want you to keep going. Okay? So you start here, and you draw the arrows in the direction. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to push it off the Möbius band. So I need to push it off to one of the sides. And I'm going to start pushing it off to that side. And I'm going to see what happens as I continue this pushing until I get to the end here. Okay? Everybody got there yet?
No.
Okay, well, I'll wait a few seconds. We have some time. You see, I start here, and then I'm going to try to draw, trying to push it off to the edge, push it off to the side, and I follow it around, and then finally I get back to where I started from. Okay? Okay, so how many people have done this? Okay. So what do you notice when you get to where you started? Okay, as she says, okay, what happens is when you get back to where you started, okay, you discover that, so I'm pushing it off onto this edge right now, but I started pushing it off to this edge. And what this means is if I try to push this off to the edge, when I come around, I'm pushing off the other edge, and what you're going to get when you come around, okay, let me draw the picture. Okay, so your Möbius band looks like this, and this is your medial circle. And if you start doing this, and you move around, when you come back, you're doing this. What that means is if this were a piece of string, we're going to try to push out the Möbius band, right before it goes off, it would look like this. If I'm going to try to take this and move it off, as I move it and go around, when I come back, it still is crossing itself. And what this means is that we cannot move this medial circle. And this is equivalent to the fact that any two lines in the plane have to intersect. By the way, if you know that fact from Euclidean geometry or projective geometry. Okay, so what I want to do, so what I'd like to do, however, is now. What we did here is we went once around the medial circle. What I'd like you to do now is go twice around the medial circle. So when you get back to where you started from, just keep repeating. So now you're going to draw twice around it. So what I want everybody to do is go around twice. So two times the medial circle. And I need to do that on mine. So once I've done that, I'll give you the additional directions. So let's see. I'm going to keep going around the medial circle. This is the quick way. Okay. And then, now what happens is you actually see that because I've gone around twice, I've traced both this side of the physical Möbius band and that side of the physical Möbius band. And whereas once around, I end up over here, twice around, I get back to where I started from. Okay. So everybody should have this. You should have... The first time you pass the media circle is on one side of the movie span, and the second time is on the other side. So you should have a line on both sides, which whatever we probably did in the first place. So once you have that, I'd like you to go back to your arrows. So what I'd like you to do is when you get here, you know, we've gone around the medial circle twice. So right here, I want to sort of continue drawing your arrows. And I'll do that over here. So I've gotten back to where I started from. I'm going to keep trying to push this circle off. But now it's twice the circle. Not once, but twice the circle. And you keep going. Put the arrow so you know what you're doing. And when you get and what happens when you get around to where you started from? So everybody do this, and then tell me what happens when you get around to where you started from. You're all done? Here, put that in the garbage. There's a bin behind you. Okay, you did it? What did you get? Yeah, so what you find when you do this is when you come around to the other side, now originally here we were pushing on the same segment in two different directions, but since we repeat the segment, we can safely just keep going around and we come back. I mean, you won't see this because you're only on one side of the Möbius map. But when you come back, this is going to be kind of coherent. You see, it's always being pushed in the same direction. And what's actually happening in the Möbius map? You need to look at the two sides. So the first time you pass on the medial circle, you're going to push it to this edge, and the second time you're going to pass to this, you're going to pass to the other edge. What this means is you can then safely start to pull these two things apart. And so you get this, and when you come around, you get this. And you keep going, and you can eventually push the medial circle to the edge. So let me summarize this. Two times the medial circle is the same thing as the edge of the Möbius band. But the edge of the Möbius band is the boundary of the circle. That equals the boundary of the disk. And then if you're on the boundary of the disk, you can keep shrinking until you get to a point. And the upshot of this, but by the way, we're almost ready for the whole punchline of the talk. I just needed to prep you for all this. The boundary of this is this space RP2 is really weird. There's a circle I can draw on it, and the circle somehow can't be moved off itself. It certainly cannot be shrunk to a point. That's what the first exercise is meant to be. But if you take the circle and you repeat it, you just go around twice, wrap it around twice, then you can pull it apart. And you can see, yes? You have a question or? No. You can see what happens. The first time I go around, I'm going to push it this way. The second time, I'm going to go around this way. And that's going to be coherent across the whole Möbius band. So we have an example of a space that there's a circle on it you cannot shrink to a point, but twice the circle can be shrunk to a point. And that's really different. That's quite a bit different than what we've seen on the sphere or the torus or anything else. Yes?
How did Möbius figure this out?
Möbius? Yes. Möbius was around 1840s.
How did he figure it out?
Well, I think he mainly just constructed the space.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is a very modern perspective on things.
Okay.
How did he figure it out? The same way we figure anything out. He thought a lot. If that's your day job, you can really come up with a lot of stuff. But but what's your name?
Cynthia.
Cynthia had a very good point. So I'm talking about the work, an understanding we've gained after many, many people smarter than me, probably smarter collectively than most of us, have thought about this off and on during their lives. And over many years of many people's work, we've come to an understanding of space that you wouldn't necessarily, you wouldn't come up with an afternoon if you started from scratch. That's part of education. So people have been spending nearly millennia trying to understand the world around us in various ways. History, literature, the human condition, science, math. And you go to university and you get a couple thousand years of human understanding crammed into your head or you know, in a few short years. And it's only because the stuff has been distilled very carefully and reworked over the centuries or decades to be in a position where we can actually absorb it. So this is not something that somebody did in one afternoon, even though we're doing it one afternoon. That's one of the great things. I mean human beings, one thing we do that makes us quite remarkable is we transmit culture to each other, and this is part of it. People think of things very hard and tortuously, and over the years that gets distilled into something that's a little easier to understand, and then we can pass it on to people in an afternoon. That's the only way we're able to advance, really. If we didn't do that, we'd still be living, you know, only into our early 30s and dying of disease, horrible diseases, you know, very young. So, I mean, human culture is a good thing. Anyways, but let's get on. I was going to talk about the Poincaré conjecture. Okay. So now we're going to get to the point. So we're done with dimension two. What's the simplest space that's three-dimensional? Simple, yes. What? Cube has a boundary. What's the simplest three-dimensional space? Yes. A three-dimensional sphere, yes. So now we can't see it because we're inside of it, maybe. So how do you view the three-dimensional sphere? We have to go by analogy. So we're obviously inside of some three-dimensional space because you can go backwards and forwards, up and down and right and left. And there's three directions to go in this space. But we can't see it at infinity. But you can imagine that this R3 that we're living in, we can imagine that you could take, you could go up one dimension from our picture of the sphere. And you could take a three-dimensional sphere, which sits inside a four-dimensional space, put it on top of a three-dimensional space and do stereographic projection. And what that tells us is that R3 that we live in is the three-dimensional sphere with an extra point in there. And you can also imagine, you go out to infinity and you just grab all the directions of infinity together to like a drawstring to a single point. Now, we can't really imagine that because you have to have a four-dimensional imagination and nobody has that I know of. So we have to try to understand by other ways. But the simplest three-dimensional space is called the three-sphere. Okay? So let's... Yes?
So if you're in four dimensions, what would the other direction be?
It depends on what you want it to be. Space-time is not the only four-dimensional space. But let's get back to the three-sphere. So the three-sphere, it's very simple. Every point looks like every other point. It's like the two-sphere, but just one more dimension. Now another feature about the three-sphere is if you take any loop in the three-sphere, knotted or not, you can take that loop and you can shrink it to itself. You can shrink it to a point. Imagine taking some loop like... here's a loop I have. So this is a nice loop in three-dimensional space. And you can imagine taking this, and you know, I've drawn it like this, you can shrink it to a point easily. Even if it's knotted, you can shrink to a point. I don't care if it crosses over itself. You can shrink to a point. And so there's a feature of three-dimensional space, and this was observed by Poincaré a long time ago. Let me say this, is that Poincaré observed that every loop, so a loop is another way of saying a circle, in S3 can be shrunk. And Poincaré, being who he was, also thought about other three-dimensional spaces. And we're going to investigate one at the end of this section. And he thought about other three-dimensional spaces. And every other three-dimensional space he thought of had loops that could not be shrunk. And so he made a conjecture. His conjecture is, it's now a theorem. Now it's a theorem of Perelman. Is that S3 is the only three-dimensional space with this property. So it took over 100 years to prove this fact, that if you take a three-dimensional space and you can shrink every loop in it, it has to be the three-sphere. Now, you may wonder... Okay, so in two dimensions, we could imagine the pretzel and the donut and other things, lots of two-dimensional spaces, even RP2. But I don't think very many of us have any familiarity with any other three-dimensional spaces beside that which we live in. Is that the case? Anybody else know any three-dimensional spaces you're friends with? Okay. So what we're going to do today, we're going to finish off by studying another three-dimensional space, and we're going to find out that I'm going to define it for you, we're going to examine it, we're going to probe it a little bit, and then we're going to realize that it's different than the three-sphere, just so you know that this statement actually has some content, that there's more than one three-dimensional space. So the three-dimensional space I'm going to look at is what I call the space of frames. So let me tell you what a frame is in the last 10 minutes. So a frame is simply a choice of an x direction, a y direction, and a z direction that are mutually orthogonal. And so now many of us have a hand, and if you have so pull out your right hand, and this and your right hand gives you, if you put your fingers like this, this gives you a frame. Your index finger, okay, make them mutually orthogonal. Don't do mutually orthogonal, right angles between all of them. It's important. You have an x direction, a y direction, and a z direction. And now I want to tell you a little bit about frames. You want to look at the one you have in front of you. Take your frame and slide it forward. It's the same frame because I really want to think of them as being just the orientation of all three of these, say, stuck at the origin. They're the same frame still. Different frame, though. Different frame. Same frame, different frame. You got that? This is kind of like teaching language. If two frames are the same, if they can be made parallel to each other, because I really want to consider them to be locked at the origin, kind of like directions in space. Okay. So the question is, what is the dimension of the space of frames? The question is, how many degrees of freedom do you have to move a frame around? Why? No. This is the same frame. These are the same frames. These two frames are the same. You fix in the origin. How many directions do you have to move your frame? What are your degrees of freedom for a frame? Anybody? Okay, how many people say one? Two? You say two? How many people say three? How many people say four? The middle group was correct. And let's explain that. So here's one way to think about it. Around each axis, I can rotate it just a little bit. And each of these rotations are three independent directions. But that's a little hard to see. My favorite way of doing it is think about, first of all, the direction of the x-axis. The x-axis can point anywhere in space, and what sort of dimension do we have? And the x-axis is where my finger is pointing. What's the space of directions for the x-axis? Anybody remember that? It's 2 because it's the sphere. So now suppose you've picked an x direction. How much freedom do you have to choose the y and z direction? Well, yeah, you can only rotate around the x-axis. And this actually tells you a complete description of this space. You think of this space as you first of all take a point on the sphere, and then onto that you add a circle of directions. Now it's kind of hard to see how it all fits together, but this gives you a way of viewing the space. It's really built up by a sphere together with a circle of directions. And you see there's two dimensions here and a third one, so that makes it three-dimensional. Okay, so now in the last couple moments, we're gonna try to examine the space of frames. So here's where everybody. Okay, who has a belt? You need to have pairs for the belt. And unfortunately, we're gonna go a couple minutes over because I sort of didn't plan my time so well. So everybody, I need everybody to stand up with a partner, one belt per pair. I have some extra belts if people need them. So and I also need a partner up here. So I need a partner. Okay, come up here. Oh, you're my partner. I need a partner here. Come up here. You're my partner. Okay, other people, get an extra belt. Okay, great. Okay, everybody, pair up with someone with a belt. Do you need some more belts? Someone could take these around. I need them back though, because I have to wear pants in the future. Okay. You'll need to stand up. Okay, here. Okay, great. Okay. So now, hurry up and pair off, and I need your attention up here for a moment. Everybody, okay, get your partner. Okay, now this belt is going to represent, every point of this belt represents a frame. So you pick one of them. I'll pick me for demonstration. If I'm at a point in this belt, there's obviously the direction along the belt. I think of that as being the x direction. There's a direction perpendicular to the belt is the z direction, and the y direction is sort of fixed. And so for instance, okay, hold it tight. So now this belt, since the belt is flat, every point in this belt gives me the same frame. So this represents just a constant. Now here, let's let the belt slack a little bit. And what happens here is I start out this frame, and we come down. It's a different frame. And we come back to the original frame. As long as her thumb and my thumb are still parallel, we always have the same frame at the beginning and the end of the belt. So what we have then is we have what I call a loop in the space of frames. This is a simple, your belt represents a simple closed curve in the space of frames. Now I want you to think about it. Okay, as long as the front and the back of the belt are the same, whatever you do to the belt, well, here, don't turn your hand. I was wrong. Whatever you do to the belt, it will be a simple closed curve in the space of frames. You know, just think about that a little bit. We can't really visualize a loop in the space of frames, but we can certainly visualize a belt. Okay, great. Okay, so now what I'd like everybody to do is take your belt and rotate it 360 degrees. 180, 360 degrees. Okay, so now we have, this is a loop in the space of frames. In fact, it's a pretty easy loop because what happens is, as I go along the belt, I'm just rotating around the x-axis 360 degrees. Are you sure that's 360 degrees? Yes, it is. Okay, so now what I'd like you to do, I'd like you to sort of move this around here. And so, for instance, one thing you might do, here, hold that tight, is you might do this. And you get another loop. So any way I move it, we get a loop. Here, you want to move it around a little bit? Do it here. Just remember to keep our thumbs parallel. Try this. Switch hands. Okay, there you go. Okay, I'd like you to take your belt, give it a full twist, and try to see what happens if you move around in the space of frames. Again, always keeping your thumbs parallel. It gets twisted up. Don't untwist. It gets twisted up pretty badly, of course. Here, why don't you do it a few times? Just do this a few times to get used to moving it around. Remember, don't move your thumb. Hold it rigid in space. Okay? If it gets too twisted, untwist and start again. Okay? Just keep doing it. Here, keep playing around. Everybody play around for a couple more minutes, because we still have 2 minutes to go. What happened? Don't twist your thumb. It just got twisted up. Watch this. There, that's untwisted. Okay, so now, did anybody get their belt untwisted? Okay, so let me tell you what happened. Okay, so let's go back here. So you start with your belt here. Attention for a moment. You rotate 180 degrees, and now that's a loop in the space of frames. And no matter what you try, you can't get it undone. You can certainly get it more twisted, but you can't get it untwisted. What this is this represents a loop in the space of frames which cannot be shrunk to a point. A point would be if the belt is straight. So now what I'd like you to do is take your belt, start playing. So here's a point. I'd like you to not do one loop, but twice around, 720 degrees. Go ahead, 720 degrees around. So 180, 360, 540, 720, okay? Everybody all wound up, 720 degrees? So now I'd like, that's a little more than 720. Now I'd like everybody to try to see if you can undo your belt. Again, keep the ends of it straight and move around. Can you undo it? Try it. What happens? Just keep going. Watch out. You're actually twisting your hand. What happened there? It was all twisted. Let me do it. So 360, 720, okay. So what happens now? Okay, what happens? Here, you go ahead. What happened? Yeah. So here, demonstration up here. So watch. 360, 720, go. And it comes undone. Okay, so what's your name again?
Audrey.
What Audrey showed is that in the space of frames, if you take this loop, we've all observed you take this loop 360 degrees, it doesn't come undone. But if you take twice the loop, it comes undone. Right? That's what we've just shown. So here, okay, thanks. Well, it's topology. But so what we have is, okay, so we're done now, but let me make one concluding statement. Okay, in the space of frames, it has some very unusual behavior similar to what we saw for the projective plane. Is that there's a loop in the space of frames that doesn't appear to be able to be undone. But if you take twice that loop, it can be undone. And for sure, that tells you that the space of frames is very different from the three sphere. And that's what I want to do today. I want to show you again that the way we investigate higher dimensional spaces in topology is we have to study them with probing, like with loops or circles or various things. We find properties that one space have that other ones don't, and that's how we tell them apart. So, for instance, and that's all I had to say. Hope you had a good time. Enjoy your donuts. Finish up your apple or thing, and I won't see you all again. So I'll need my belts back.
Just one moment before.
Hey! I should have brought these out.
That was really good, thank you.
Sure.
It was really interesting. What's this?
It's a Möbius band.
Oh, it's a
wood Möbius band, so it's a little rigid. And this is even better. Be careful, that's glass. That's two Möbius bands. If you cut it this way, it's a Möbius band.
You did a really good job explaining very complex concepts.
It's my job.
You did it really well.
I'm glad you liked it. Well, this one's kind of fun. This is what happens if you take a Möbius band and you cut it, not in the center, but a third of the way. And it falls apart into a Möbius band and something else that are linked together.
What's the something else?
It's just a strip of paper with a full twist. No.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
One more belt. I wouldn't. No, this is not where I work.
I was totally, so last time I looked this up, but never got a chance to mention it. So I haven't read this yet, so I can't vouch for it.
That's all right.
But there's a,
Or you've been all that.
Yeah. There's a...
It's a Möbius band.
So,
but it represents it. If you get a Möbius band, you cover the
third journal, which I guess is
breaks into two pieces.
Okay.
Möbius band.
This character called Algebraic Geometry for Pickles.
Okay.
And actually, I can just you know this, right?
Yeah.
So I can just send it to you.
Yeah.
But it looks, yeah, it looks like it might be a, it might be something that would be used for the guys.
Okay.
So
is that something you have to have a membership to in order to get the journal?
The MAA. That's a good question.
Yeah. I might be
you
able
can,
to buy it for like $6.
I don't bother.
Okay.
You can if you're affiliated with any sort of like if you have affiliated with a university, for example,
probably
you can
I'm
use
not,
their
so,
access.
Yeah.
You can try if a lot of university libraries will allow like community members
that's
to use them.
That's what I was going to say. UT being a public school, can I get a library membership through?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can ask the library people, but our library definitely has journal access.
Okay.
And if you don't, we can find a way to get you the paper.
Okay.
But yeah. In any case, I thought that might be interesting.
Yeah.
Can I get some coffee? Oh
yeah.
It's expensive knowledge.
This is one Möbius strip. And
oh yeah. Is it a puzzle? Yeah. That's
it's
what happens when you cut.